Hey, Potters, welcome to episode 292 of Cosplod, the podcast for all things cosplay.
Hooray.
We survived the eclipse, everybody.
Yay, we still here. No isekai for us.
Nope. But yes, we survived. I did not cosplay during the eclipse. I don't know about you.
No, I had to work. I was doing a work event, but I still got to see it because that was part of the work event.
Indeed. And great pictures were had as well.
Yes. It was interesting. It was different.
Indeed. But we're here to talk about cosplay.
Yes.
Not about the sun.
No.
Being covered in the sky.
Yay.
So let us talk about cosplay instead.
Alrighty, so what cosplay madness are we starting with? What shenanigans?
Let me start with mine, because I think you have a great deal more than I do to talk about.
I have many things, and I couldn't, surprise people by wheeling out the dress form, because it would have gotten caught on my rug, so it's going to kind of chill here. But I have pictures. I have better close-ups.
Alright, so I made a hat.
Ooh, oh! That's really good for your first time!
It has the teardrop shape in front, even though it wasn't originally supposed to. And if I wear this, it still looks way too much like a top hat, which is why I don't like it, because the shape is not quite right. And you're like, Amber, this isn't cosplay. Why are you making a hat? It's actually for cosplay. I made the bigger version of the hat so that I could practice in order to make the smaller version of the hat, which are fascinators. And I know that there are patterns for fascinators, but I wanted to be able to draft my own pattern because I don't like some of the patterns that are out there. And I figure if I make the bigger one and I, you know, get decently good at that, mm-hmm. then I should be okay at the smaller ones. My hat's off, pun intended, to all of the people who are actually practitioners of millinery. Because this stuff is hard, yo.
Yeah.
This stuff is super hard. You would think, oh, it's so easy. You just, you know, cut out the pieces and put them together and you get a hat. There is an art and a science to doing this, I discovered during the process. This is actually the third edition of this hat because I kept having to take it apart and recut the pieces and reshape them over and over and over again. Because much like making a piece of clothing, it's really hard to make 2D shapes into 3D shapes. And so you can tell, like, this hat has a 3D shape to it. Like, the brim is actually permanently down, the sides are slightly up, and the back actually has a downward curve to it as well. So it has 3D shape to it, and that's extraordinarily hard. And just like cosplay, I also found out that when you make the hat, you have to make the hat so that you're going to wear it over anything else you're going to have on your head. So in other words, if you have to wear a ponytail, you have to account for that when you make the hat to make sure it's the right size to fit on your head. Because I kept making it too big. Because I wear a bun in my hair a lot. And so I kept having the hat be the size for when I would have the bun on. It's like, no, I need to shape it just for my head, not how I have my hair styled. And I mean, you do the same thing when you make costumes. Like, you have to have the proper undergarments and whatever, like, bodysuits and stuff you're going to wear underneath the cosplay to make sure it fits. And so it was a very long journey. This isn't bad for a first try, but it's going to be my only try. I'm going to leave this to the professionals. I will just buy a fascinator at this point from somebody who is much better at making them than I am. But I had planned to use the fascinator with the Lolita cosplay that I was planning, because that's going to be the next one on my list, which is why it's related to cosplay, is because I'm actually starting to make the accessories for the Lolita costume. And that was going to be the first one, but I'm going to have to purchase one now. Oh gosh. But that is my cosplay update. It literally took me a month, y'all, to put this together and take it apart 3 times.
Yeah, buddy.
And it's made of felt, incidentally. Well, that is my cosplay update.
I do want to give you some kudos for that, though, because putting together a hat is a very challenging thing. I have done it one time, I guess technically 2 times if you count my songbird outfit, but that was still a pain in the rear, and I pretend that one doesn't exist. The fact that you were able to accomplish it is a very good thing. Congrats for that. But secondly, it actually looks really good. I know you're not happy with it, and there's some things that could require fine tuning, but the way that it turned out is still really good.
It's not bad. I just wish it didn't look quite so much like a top hat.
Sure.
Because it makes me look like I'm a magician instead of... What I was going for is fedora style.
Okay.
But it doesn't quite have that shape to the brim. And that's partially because of how the felt fit over the foam inner lining that's inside of there to help it keep its shape. Because the felt, for those who don't know, felt is a non-woven.
Yeah.
And so it does not stretch well. And so when you're trying to fit it over another shape, you don't really have much leeway. And so that made it doubly difficult. Mm-hmm. I think if I had made it out of fabric like the pattern called for, that had a little bit of stretch to it, it might have been a little bit easier.
Yeah, a little bit more give and a little bit, especially if you're doing it along the bias, you have a lot more stretch to work with.
Yes, that was a big part of it. Felt doesn't really have much of a bias.
No.
Yeah. But, you know, felt, there's nothing wrong with felt as a fabric, as noted in chat, that felt makes an awesome lining, actually.
Yeah.
I have it on all of my sword scabbards, the ones that I've made, all of them are lined in felt. So it's a really good material in some cases, just not in all of them, like hats.
Especially when the pattern calls for something else.
And yes, Sakura, Faux shape would have been preferred, and also buckram, which is the traditional material used for making hats.
That's what I used the second time.
Yep.
Very painful.
There are proper materials for it, just I didn't have any on hand. And I didn't want to buy anything super expensive because this is a trial piece and I wasn't sure how it was going to turn out. So I just used whatever I had lying around, which happened to be foam and felt.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You learned something. Hooray!
I learned a lot.
All right, I guess my turn then, huh?
It is your turn.
Okay, so remember last time when I said I was interested in making another book?
Uh-huh.
If I'm making another book, I have to make another cosplay that goes with it.
Depends on the book. If the book has a cosplay that goes with
it. Oh, there's plenty of options. There are plenty of options. So this is the one that I chose. Ah! This is going to be Gale of Waterdeep from Baldur's Gate 3. Who is the wizard character.
I approve.
It's practically not quite done, but it's getting there. I actually attached the collar today. Whee! And to help everybody out so you can see it up close, since obviously I can't drag the sucker next to me, I have pictures. Hooray! Congratulations. Enjoy them. I thought it would be easy per most of my costume decisions, and it wasn't. Probably the most time-consuming part was doing all of the fracking diamonds along the arms and the back.
Yep. I had shapes are hard, yo.
Oh man. And that type of that type of fabric doesn't exist anywhere. Like, it just doesn't. So it was like I knew going into it I would have to be painting it or stamping it, which is what I ended up doing. I just didn't take into account how many diamonds I was going to need. And it ended up being in the realm of 210. It's great. It's awesome. I love it. It ended up turning out very, very well. The whole process ended up going smoothly, like in my brain, like I know what I'm doing. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. It's great. I do appreciate the fact that Larian Studios, for the most part, put seams everywhere. So it's at least somewhat realistic, except for two spaces where I was like, dude, do you need side seams? Why are there no side seams? So I fixed that. I did make some adjustments to this so it could fit my body shape better because I didn't really want to do like a crossplay and I'm not doing a gender bend. I just wanted to make his robe because I thought it was nice colors. I like the style of it. So let me just do that. But I did have to do some additional seams to fit the top. And I let the back be a little bit more floofy and flowy. So when I walk, it kind of makes the back go out a bit more, and I thought that was fun, so I wanted to do that. I made an ungodly amount of bias tape to do all of the edging, because that's going to be the next step now that I have the lining and the collar attached, is putting on all of the bias tape that I made. I need to measure out how much I made, because it's probably an ungodly amount. Every little bit of purple fabric that I had was used for this costume, and I had just enough. It was perfect.
Yep.
So there's some more painting photos, as you can see, the giant mess that I made. I actually messed up a little bit on one of the sleeves. I overdid it on painting in certain areas, so I had to recut the sleeve and redo all the painting. So I actually had to cut out more diamonds. It's fine. It's fine. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here. I did decide to do fancy mode on this because the costume, I mean, the fabrics in the game are probably a cotton and definitely leather for the brown pieces, but I had this really beautiful silk and it shimmers so wonderfully. It's got this lovely red and blue woven together to get this gorgeous purple.
Yep. You can see the iridescent effect on the camera.
It's gorgeous. It's so much prettier in person. And I'm hoping that the pictures that I'm showing right now are highlighting that. So I wanted to use that and I was like, screw it. I'm doing it for everything. So that's for the brown. It's for the red parts. Great stuff. And I just did the stitching the way that I wanted to. I had to be extra and do my decorative stitching because that's what I do. There's a shirt underneath here that's got unnecessary decorative stitching because I can do that. I have issues. I'm aware of this. But it's coming together and I'm very glad that there's not much left to do before it's quote unquote done. Really, other than binding it, now that I got the collar on, I have to make these weird attachment pieces here. I don't know what they are. They're decorative and they're pointless. But I got to make them and they're going to be snapped on so that way I can easily take them off and wash the sucker whenever I need to. Done. Then after that, I got to make the bracers and the belt. And then fabric portions are done. So then I can go ahead and make my book because it's all about a book. That's the most important part, as long as I get to make the book. Let me show you guys the stamp that I made out of craft foam. Ayo! Best idea ever. What I did, as you guys saw, I had numerous amounts of diamonds. I made these out of freezer paper, ironed it down on the fabric first. And what I did was I oversized my stamp. That way, when I pressed it on, I wouldn't have to worry about bleed. So it made everything nice and crisp and clean as I was working through it. But yeah, just craft foam, guys. You don't have to go crazy and buy stamps unless you want to. The big thing I would recommend is if you do a stamp, regardless if you do this or a rubber stamp, make sure you paint on it. Don't dip, because then you'll get more smudgy. Always paint on top and just a nice even coat. That's all you need. One stamp, poop, you're good to go.
Keep in mind that when you make foam stamps, the foam will eventually get saturated with paint to the point where it won't hold anymore. So you may end up having to make just a couple of them so that you can swap out.
I ended up making two of them, but I didn't have to swap. This one lasted me plenty. Yep. But I think it's also because I was using Jacquard. So one, high quality paint. Two, the coating that I was doing was just a nice, thin, even layer. And then it was just press, coat, press, coat, press. Right. And because the layers were so thin and even, it didn't waste this up. This has got plenty of power to it and many layers too.
Right. With Jacquard, you don't need that thick of a layer. So that's just something to keep in mind with your paint. Like, don't like go to town on your stamp.
There's no need to do that because the quality of the paint is so good that you just need that one coat and you're done. Unless you want to make it darker, then you can do multiple coats and multiple takes. Sure. But yeah, there we go. I a month of not podcasting and I almost made a full costume. How about that? I was productive when I really wasn't productive at all last year. Hooray! The other thing that I was going to share, and I can't reach for the fabric because the fabric is out of the way. Yeah, and that's fine. I am planning on going through and remaking some of my first costumes now that I have all this expertise and knowledge in my brain. And like, I know I can do better. I want to make better. So the plan is to remake Franziska von Karma from the Ace Attorney series. And I think she was like my second or third costume I have ever made. So by comparison, I'm like, this was going to be immaculate. I know it's going to be amazing. I'm a little disappointed though, because I ordered the fabric 2 weeks ago and only half of it has arrived. The other half still hasn't released yet. So I'm like on pins and needles because I really want to start working on it. I got great suiting fabric, this wonderful, I don't even know what it is. It's a weird cotton polyester blend, but it has this sheen to it that almost kind of looks like leather. It's weird. But it drapes like butter. It is so gorgeous in how that looks. And I'm like, this is going to be perfect for the vest and for the mini skirt. Great, I'm done there. But I got like proper shirting fabric, that suit, and everything's going to be nicely tailored, even all the puffy bits. So I'm looking forward to starting that project. probably in between making the book, because if the Book of the Dead was any indication of how long the book will take me, it might be a year-long project, and that's fine. That's fine. So there we go. There is my plethora of cosplay updates. I have been making all the things. I don't know when I'm going to wear them. But they're there.
As much as I would love to remake all of my old costumes, I think I've determined that I'm kind of... It's not that I'm past those characters, it's that I'm past cosplaying as those characters.
Makes sense.
The characters are a very different body shape than I am, for one, but also because a lot of them are a lot younger than I am.
Sure.
And so I could remake them, but I think I've also always wanted to kind of flex my creativity a little bit and consider what a time-skipped version of them would look like.
Oh, that would be fun.
That could be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I've started thinking about that.
Yeah, that would be different. Something kind of new and just take your cosplay brain someplace else. I enjoyed doing alternate versions, like with the Bulbasaur costume that I made.
Exactly. It's like an art book exercise.
Yeah, just doing that from scratch and pulling all that together was such an experience. Yeah. And I would love to do that again. Yeah. Not anytime soon, but I would love to do that again.
Right. Yeah. Plans will be made.
Plans will always be made.
I don't know if we'll actually like do anything with the plans, but plans will be made.
I have learned that you can make the plans if you follow through with them. It's cool. If you don't, that's cool too. You know, just life kind of goes. It has ebbs and flows. You are along for the ride and you do what you can. And sometimes things that sounded great a year ago are like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. So you don't. You move on.
Pretty much. All right. Well, you spoke about quality of paint.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move on to our cosplay news and a seller? A local, well-known reseller of paint?
Yeah. Uncoincidentally, literally days after we recorded our last episode, Joanne did file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which was sad to hear, but it was not the end of the world like everybody else was making it out to be, because they're still in business. They are absolutely still sending out their mailers, because I've been getting them every other week.
And they did not suddenly close a bunch of stores, no. As far as we know.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be underperforming stores that will close within the near future, but there hasn't been anything drastic. It's a lot of internal restructuring, and it seems like everything is still going on as normal for their day-to-day business.
Now, we don't necessarily know how long the situation will last. I mean, bankruptcy is not a quick proceeding, so I mean there may still end up being a lot of changes, so I would say don't suddenly anticipate a bunch of 80% off clearance sales at your local Joann's. If there are stores that are closing, I would keep expectations low in terms of going through, and it's not like they're going to sell off the entire store, because there are still other stores they can ship it to. So I would just keep expectations low in terms of suddenly getting an awesome cosplay haul. My apologies to all my fellow cosplayers, as much as I would love for all of you to get an awesome cosplay haul.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, so let me pull up the exact details here, because I know one of the first things that happened was that they received some financing as part of the bankruptcy, $132 million.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They need to reduce their balance debt by $505 million, and a lot of it is just retweaking their financing.
Reorg.
Yeah.
Yep. They're reorganizing in bankruptcy.
And I believe, if I'm reading this correctly, here we go. They anticipated trying to get that resolved by end of May at the earliest, but they felt like that they would be able to emerge out of bankruptcy this year. So, I mean, that's pretty good, all things considered. I mean, it usually doesn't turn around that quickly, but it seems like they already knew what the plan was going to be before they made the filings with the court. So
I'm interested to see what happens once they exit bankruptcy.
Yes.
Like how that looks, basically.
What's...
Because I know one of the things that I've been super bummed by mm-hmm. in the last year or two have been all of the different like crafty kind of retailers and hobby stores that have been closing their doors, like TNT Cosplay.
Right.
And it gets harder and harder to source certain products that were only carried in certain places. And it's not like they're suddenly, you know, being picked up by other stores. So like, something like Hexflex, it's like, there aren't really many other places that carry some of this stuff. Barge is another one. Yeah. Only certain stores carry Barge. And so it's really kind of bummed me out seeing all these different stores closing their doors. It makes it a little hard to source supplies for cosplaying.
Mm-hmm. Since our options are getting more and more limited, just recently there was a really big fabric store that was an independent seller in Houston that's closing their doors too. And it's just like, our options are so limited that we're only going to have access to the big chain craft stores mm-hmm. or online. And like, I'm completely online for all my fabric buying because what I have pretty locally much. Is just the chain stores now. And I don't like any of them. And I think part of the reason with Joann's is that their selection has been getting limited and dwindling. For sure, mm-hmm. I know the quilters, especially on the CraftSnark subreddit, really don't like the quality of Joann's quilting cotton as of late. They just said it's been going downhill. And I'm like, quilters are your bread and butter, Joann. If you can't keep them, you're going to have some problems. And that's probably why it's going down.
I have noticed the quality of their quilting fabric change mm-hmm. because I do use it occasionally, especially for pattern making.
Yes.
Because it's really inexpensive and it's easy to use.
Exactly.
So I use it a lot for that. And I honestly would think that hobbies like quilting would be more of their bread and butter right. than some of the really uber expensive devices they've started selling lately.
Yeah.
Like the new Laser Forge product that they've been selling. It's a laser cutter. And the really expensive, the resin casting device, and you had the Ditto, and you have all of these programmable sewing machines and their pattern maker and all this
niche.
Other stuff. It's like most, given the economy, most crafters probably don't have $1,000 to drop on a device right now, but they'll probably have like $50 to drop on fabric.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm just misunderstanding and confused. Very possible.
It's very possible. We could all be very misunderstood and confused about all of it.
But something I am not confused about is folk art paints.
Oh, yes. We do love the folk arts.
And so, as promised earlier this year, I did finally sit down and do a review, not just of the Color Shift folk art paints, but also of the Glitterific folk art paints. And, hopefully you find this useful as I have found the paint.
Hey Potters, Amber here, and today I have a product review for you for a pair of things I've been wanting to show you for a long time, ever since I purchased them and started using them. These are so cool, and I wanted to show them to you. We have the Color Shift paints by Folk Art. They are actually combinations of colors because you can actually choose to which side of the continuum that you get your colors for. So for purple, they actually have a version where you can get purple and red. This particular one is actually the purple, blue, green. And then for the green, you can tilt it towards the blue side. And I forget the other side. I think you can tilt it towards yellow. So this is the version that actually tilts just a little bit towards yellow. And then the other set that I wanted to show you, these are the Glitterific line, and they are definitely, in fact, Glitterific. These are different than your standard glitter paints, and you will see why once I open these up and show you. I will also warn you that they are just a tad bit on the smelly side, so please, whenever you are using any kind of paint, do it where you have adequate ventilation. You will thank yourself for it later. You can see I have a variety of materials here that I will be showing you these paints on. So we have foam core board. We have wood in the form of a paint stirrer stick. I have some cardboard here, and I have some foam. And you say, Amber, why is the foam looking weird? And the reason for that is because I took this little guy right here, Hexflex, and I actually sealed one of them. But the reason I sealed it is because one of the most important considerations when you have paints like these and you're using them for prop work or for cosplay is, will the paint crack? whenever I bend things, because of course the human body is all kinds of curvy, and you want to be able to move in your armor and not have to worry about the paint cracking and looking terrible, unless of course the cracked look is what you're going for. So I finished one of these, or I sealed one of these with Hexflex to show you the difference of when you have sealed foam versus when you have unsealed foam, so that you can see the difference. First things first, going to step in front of the camera very carefully here. I'm going to start out with the green, and I'm not actually going to paint with this yet. I am simply going to show you what it looks like. Look at that beautiful paint footage right there. You can see it's very... Make-A-Wish! Pop. You can see it's very thick, and it has almost a sort of iridescent quality to it in the light. Almost opalescent, like you'd see on crow feathers. It's that sort of opalescent effect that you're looking for. This is a very weighty paint. It is not a lightweight paint. This is very thick. Think Ceram Coat, for those of you who are enthusiasts of the Ceram Coat brand. What I want to do is show you kind of the texture of this. There you go. So you can see I have a whole bunch of paint. That is very, very thick paint. You can tell it's not going to take a lot of this to actually get some good coverage on your items. I'll start off with the cardboard, and I'm just going to put... Ooh, that brush is definitely very, very stiff. So remember that this cardboard is unsealed. So because cardboard is a porous material, a lot of this very first coat of paint is going to soak right into the cardboard and you're not going to get much. But you can already see that sheen, that sort of iridescent effect on the cardboard. Now this is a very thin coat, as you can probably tell through the camera. You can still see the cardboard through it, is what I'm getting at. So this paint, even though it is fairly thick, is going to take multiple coats of paint. Even if I were to seal this, it'll still take you a couple of coats, which is pretty normal for acrylic paint. But you can definitely see that sort of iridescent effect, and because this is porous, this will dry much faster than a non-porous. So this one is less porous. So if I were to take a little bit of this paint here, here is my lovely wooden stick, and then I'm just going to paint a little bit on the edge of that with my uber stiff paintbrush, which I probably should have soaked in water first. Because this is less porous than the cardboard, you can see this coat of paint actually goes farther, because less of it is being absorbed into the wood, and you can see it still has that sort of iridescent effect. Now that said, because this is less porous than the cardboard, this is going to take longer to dry. Not all wood is like this. This particular wood is actually a really finely grained wood, and so it's not quite as porous. And so this will actually take just a little bit longer than the cardboard will take to dry. And the same thing will go for the foam core board. And so when I paint, and I'll show you the difference just a little bit. So if I were to take this and I'm going to paint just on the side where the foam is, you can see I covered that really fast. And you can see that a lot of it soaked in, but it actually has a remarkably good set of coverage there. Like, you can't see the foam through it as much anymore. So this actually may need less coats, this particular foam, than you would, say, on the top of it, which I will show you how streaky this looks. This is not to give you a preview. This is just to say that I've done this before and I've seen how streaky and less than optimal the coverage looks. You can see how utterly thin that coat of paint. You can even still see the grid lines right here. The grid lines you can still see through the paint. So with something like foam core board, this is just showing you that if it's non-porous, then it really, really needs a lot of extra coats to go ahead and cover this. You're still getting that iridescent effect. You can actually still see it shine just a little bit. The iridescent effect is not as strong here. And part of that is because of the laminate. The laminate is shiny, and so it's reflecting through the paint, and it's making the paint itself a little bit less visible. The porosity of your material has a great deal to do with how effective the paint will be. If you have a great paint, but you have kind of a poor surface, a poorly prepped surface especially, then you'll find that the paint doesn't perform as well, even if it's a high quality paint, because the quality of the paint can only go so far. Now, granted, if you have a poor quality paint on a great surface, it's still going to look, well, suboptimal, to use a phrase, because you have to have high quality in both. You want both a high quality paint and a high quality surface or a prepped surface with these sorts of paints to get the maximum effect, which in this case is iridescence. So I'm covering a good chunk of this piece of foam. This is the one that's primed with Hexflex. And you can see I'm repeatedly going over it. And the reason is because I'm pushing the paint into the pores of the foam so that it's effectively sealing the paint into the foam so that when I do the second layer of this, more of it will sit on top and you'll get the effect, the iridescent effect, much more readily than if I were to just glide over it and do like really, really, really thin coats. I find that having a thicker coat, just for the first coat, the coats that come after those 2, 3, and 4 can be thinner coats, but I find that if you do a thicker first coat, it tends to go a lot easier on later steps. Now you can see here, even in the light, that that's still a pretty thin coat. You can definitely see the foam through it, even though this is sealed. And it just goes to show you that even when you seal, that it's still pretty porous. And so it's absorbed a lot of the paint in that first layer. But it still has a pretty nice, you can see the little flecks of glitter that are in the paint, and that's what makes this iridescent. I'll show you the difference on the Hexflex versus the unsealed foam. And I'll see if I can do about the same area's worth of paint on here. The sealed paint, or the sealed, the one I'm flapping right now, the sealed version actually looks almost twice as deep as the one that is uncoated, which is the one I am flapping right now. So you can see that there's actually about a 2x difference in the coverage of that paint, which means I will have to do half the layers of paint on the sealed version. And you can see that it also has less foam showing through, and that it actually shines just a bit better. I forgot that I also included some Plaster of Paris samples. This is just a little cast gem that I had. This is one of my spares. So that you can see what the purple looks like. This is the one that tilts blue-green. Plaster of Paris, I have found, does not usually need sealing or priming before you paint on it. Now granted, that doesn't necessarily just mean one coat paint and done. You still need multiple coats on this, but you don't have to do any special preparation beyond maybe lightly sanding the surface of this, just so that the paint has something to stick to a little bit better. But other than that, I find that you don't really have to prime the surface. And Plaster of Paris is kind of average in its porosity. So that's just one coat. And you can tell it's not very strong right now. And that is partially because I need more coats of paint, for one. But for two, something that I found in this paint when I bought it and I was first trying it is that the luminescence or the iridescence of the purple one is, this one is less iridescent than the green. Like this one, you can actually see the little glitter flecks in it. You can still see the glitter a little bit in the bottle, just I have found that this particular, the darker colors have a harder time showing the glitter flakes than the lighter colors do. I very much like the Color Shift paint. However, it is very expensive. I'm not sure that the amount that they're charging for these is worth the effect that you get out of it, especially with some of them like the purple, the plum flash, that don't quite show up as well with the iridescent effect. Maybe with some of the lighter colors, it might be worth it. Can you add glitter to paint and get the same kind of effect? Maybe. You could probably get some of the fine powder glitter and get an iridescent paint, like one of the metallic lines. But not very many paints, folk art included, have a large metallic line yet of their paints. It's pretty much the neutral metallics, which were going to be gold, silver, rose gold, and copper, and brass. Those are pretty much the metallic paints that you'll find. Now I will show you the glitterific paints. This particular version, this black opal, actually has a higher contrast, and so it's easier to see than the white opal. Look how gloriously glitterific that is. So this paint that they use for the glitterific line, as I take some out on the paintbrush, is very thick. This actually has flake glitter in it. So this is not the same kind of glitter that you would use, say, on plaster ornaments to mimic snow. It's not the really fine party glitter. This is actually full-on flake glitter. And when you paint it on something, you can see how thick that is when I put it on. And the flake glitter itself, the flakes that are in this, are very, very thick. So you'll find that once you've, like, initially brushed it on, you need to spread out the flakes with your paintbrush. Because otherwise everything tends to clump up, and it will look a little bit odd. You can see the black here are part of the flake glitter. You can see how large those flakes are. You say, Amber, those are so huge. Why would you ever want to use this sort of thing on a costume? And my answer to you is that if you are doing opals in particular, or you want that opalescent effect, the glitterific paints are actually really, really good for that. And let me show you how that looks. This is one of those same plaster gems painted to look like a black opal. And it is, in fact, using the white opal glitterific paint. It's using this, not the black. What I did is I did a black flat coat of acrylic first, because remember, the undercoat is important. And then I used a bunch of different iridescent paints, and I kind of flicked it on there using a Bob Ross technique. And then when I was done, I put this on top of it so that you get that sort of opalescent. You can see the glitter flex. So this is what the lighter version looks like. You can see how iridescent that is. So this is the lighter version of this. And you can see how the two of those look side by side. You can see the difference, but you can also see that the similarity is there as well with how it glitters in the light. And you can use these in any sort of jewelry or setting. If you want to do that sort of Bob Ross technique of getting the pearlescent or the opalescent effect, what you can do is you can take a paint like this. And then what you do is you get a fan brush, and then you will load this full of paint. And I'm making Bob Ross X motions, but you will basically do that inside the cap, and you will fill these bristles with paint. And then what you will do is you will get a hard surface. You have to have a surface that will resist your movement, because what you're going to do is you're going to take your fan brush right here, and then you're going to brush it like so, and I'm brushing away from me. It's going to spatter everywhere. So I highly recommend, if you're going to use this technique and you want to get that opalescent effect, have a towel or a series of napkins or something underneath your work surface, because doing this is going to get very, very messy very quickly. You'll also find that you need to reload your fan brush multiple times. So anytime that you start running out of spatter, if you need like more flecks of paint, just reload your fan brush, do your little X strokes inside the cap, and then lather, rinse, repeat the process. The drier that your hard surface is, the better this works. For the glitterifics, these I like a lot. And here's why. They are a pain and a half to use. And like the iridescence, they are also very expensive. The thing is that not only does it come with flake glitter, which is a lot more expensive than powder glitter. I should know, because I tried to buy some to experiment with it. And it's actually more expensive to buy the container of flake glitter than these are. But also because the gel that's inside of these sets really well, so that it almost acts like a sealant. I don't really have to put a sealant coat on them because the gel that comes with it acts like one. As with the iridescence, can you just buy the flake glitter and put it into a bottle of paint and get the same effect? Yeah, potentially you could. With something like this, you could probably do it with black acrylic paint and then put the flake glitter inside. But with something like this, where the base paint is actually translucent, it's clear, it's not white, it's clear. That one's a little harder to find because it's actually pretty difficult to find clear paint. You can get clear sealant, you can get clear primer, but I have actually never seen clear paint. You probably will not use very much of a bottle at a time. This will last you forever, but I think this one might actually be worth the purchase. So, hope you all enjoyed my product review.
And we're back.
Yay.
In all seriousness, I was not being sarcastic. Hopefully you all found that useful.
Right.
Because I did not mean to imply that folk art was not useful, just that the only thing about it that's not useful is the price.
Yeah, it's Val went out and bought some.
Super expensive.
And I had to use a coupon, and it was still enough to kind of make my eye twitch. Like, I've never spent this much on paint before. And usually I buy either Ceram Coat or Folk Art for their metallics, because I love their metallics, and Ceram Coat. And those are like $253 a bottle. And even with the coupon, I was a little like, ooh.
Yeah, if you're going to spend, you know, $5, $6 on a bottle of paint, the metallics,
yeah,
can't go wrong with those. These are worth what you pay for them. Whether it's folk art, Ceram Coat, doesn't matter. Generally, the metallic paints are worth what you pay for them.
You'll get longevity.
The Glitterific. These are also worth what you pay for them. A little bit will go a very long way.
Yes.
And so these will last you a really long time, as long as you don't leave them open. In which case, they will dry out. And then they will not be very useful to you at all, except as a paperweight. So just remember to close your paint bottles when you're done using them. So the Glitterific, these are also worth your time and money. The Color Shift, not worth $5. Like, it has the nice iridescent effect on it, yes. But honestly, I would rather have the metallic effect myself as a cosplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you want that kind of like glittery, like really powdery kind of effect, you can always get something like this, which is a Ceram Coat Sparkle Glaze. This is a much more liquid, like watery paint than the Glitterific, which is a gel.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you think of when you think of paint, and it has the powder fine glitter in it. So you can just take this, add it to one of your metallic paints, you know, kick in a second metallic paint if you want to swirl them together and get the sort of mixed effect, and just use that, and you'll pay slightly more money, but you'll also get a lot more paint.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the only downside to it, is just it's not really enough bang for your buck.
Yeah, for both of those paints, I don't believe I put that in the tutorial, not that tutorial, the review itself, but they are both listed mm-hmm. as for decorative purposes. So they're meant more for decor that you can just pop in your house and you leave it. It's not meant for movement or flexing or bending. So just be mindful of that. And I noticed that too with the little swatch that I did with the Glitterific. Just trying to even do a teeny little bit of a bend on the foam, I was like, oh, this is not going to go anywhere. And that's fine. It's a scrap piece of foam for a reason. But I was like, if you're not keeping it on a flat, non-bendable surface, don't want to use it.
Yep. And priming will only take you so far.
Yeah.
Like, if I were to coat it in Hexflex like I did in the tutorial, I mean, I'm not going to empty a bottle of Hexflex over a sheet of foam just so I can paint on it.
You can use them on like glassware and stuff too.
Right. For cosplay, you can use them on props.
Sure. As long as they're not bendy.
I would say if you make your armor out of something like Wonderflex or styrene, one of the harder materials, you can probably use it on that too. If you're going to go with foam or anything softer, I wouldn't recommend it. It's asking for trouble. Let's put it that way. Not saying it won't turn out well for you. It might, just less chance of success.
There's potential for cracking.
Yeah. And that's the last thing you want on your armor, unless that is the effect you're going for. In which case, how about it?
You do you.
We totally haven't been doing this podcast together for 12 years.
No.
But the paints are really good if you're trying to go for that opalescent effect on jewelry.
Sure, yeah.
Or for like gems and props, it's really good for that.
Yeah, I can concur, having messed with them after watching Amber's review earlier in the week before I edited the video.
Yeah.
I concur. When I went out and bought some, I was like, okay, yeah, I can see where it could be applicable, but for like 99% of the things that I would do, I would never use them.
Yep. It has a very specific set of needs.
Yes.
In which it can be used. I mean, if you're going for that kind of effect, it's cheaper just to buy nail polish, frankly. You'll get the same iridescent color change effect
in a bottle.
And we've
been using that stuff for eons.
Yep, just make sure if you use it, ventilate properly.
Ventilate.
Definitely ventilate. All right. Do we have anything else for this episode?
This episode is done. We can wrap it up.
Cool beans. Well, of course, if you'd like to join in the conversation, let us know what your favorite brand of paint to use is. Feel free to join in the conversation via any of our social media, which, of course, you can find here.
For those who are watching, the information is, of course, always located right by Amber or down in the show notes. For those who are listening, visit us at cospod.org, on Facebook and Instagram at Cosplay Podcast, on YouTube as CosPodcast, and on Blue Sky as CosPod.
Or, of course, if you'd like to go the traditional route and email us, you are welcome to email us, podcast@cospod.org, where you will get an answer from each one of us, along with curated Nick Cage memes.
Oh, shoot. I forgot to send that guy a Nick Cage meme. Okay, I got to fix this. Hold on. I need to write this down. Someone emailed us and I forgot about Nick Cage. No!
See, we hold to our word. We will ensure that you are given a custom Nick Cage meme every time you contact us.
I literally just wrote it down on my phone, so I'm going to do that right afterwards. I'm sorry, sir. I forgot. I was rushing when I answered you.
Otherwise, please stay safe. Stay healthy out there. Keep working on all those cosplays so that we can all see your smiling, shining faces at a convention local to us ASAP. Otherwise, we'll see you all next time in episode 293. Happy cosplaying, everybody. Good night.
Bye.